Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I probably don't need to say that anymore, but I just said it. And I'm very happy to sit with you in meditation, and even whatever comes after happy, I feel that way too. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes. We're going to start soon. So please get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or in a chair or on the couch. And if you're seated in a chair, try to sit with your feet flat on the floor, unless that is uncomfortable, in which case don't do it. But we want to find a way to sit upright and feel supported by our own body's strength. So before we sit, I want to continue a conversation started a few weeks ago, but you don't have to go back and listen to anything if you just popped in at this moment. But what I am talking about is what makes our view of meditation in the Open Heart Project unique, I think I can say, in all fairness, or different. And if you're not interested in that, cool, I respect that. Jump ahead to the meditation. But now that you're here, it might be useful to consider that we're not trying only for stress reduction, although all hail stress reduction. We're not trying just to live a more accomplished life, although yay for accomplishments. We're on a spiritual journey. And you know what? I don't even know what that means. I kind of know a little bit at this point after 30 plus years what it means for me, but I do not know what it means for you. All I know, and I really know this one, is that a meditation practice will help you to discover that path and help you to remain on it, because it has twists and turns and confusements, I know that's not a word, and joys that are often hard to recognize. So anyway, let's see, 1, 2, 3. Today is the fourth one. You can go back and listen to the others if you want. You don't have to. But here are the first three very, very briefly. As practitioners, we engage in a daily ritual to the best of our ability, because life is life and things are busy and almost no one is 100% consistent, except one person I met once, and I believe her. But there's a sense of I start my day or I end my day, whenever your ritual is, by reconnecting with myself and what's important to me and my own breath through the practice of meditation. So that's the first one. Second one is we live as mystics, hiding in plain sight, which means something like we view our life as important and sacred, and not just my life, but your life and the lives of others, and not just humans, but sentient beings of all kinds. And to view life as important and sacred, for lack of a better word, is to take a mystical approach to every day, not to ascend to a mountaintop or become a monastic or wear a wizard hat, but to treat yourself and your experience and those you encounter and your home, your world, with respect and dignity. That's our definition of living as mystics for right now. The third one last week was the personal is not an obstacle. It is the way. Often in spiritual circles, it seems that the big problem that's pointed out for everyone, if you only get rid of this problem, all your other problems would be solved and you would attain nirvana or enlightenment or whatever the objective is. And that problem is you. If you didn't have an ego, if you didn't have your wants and your dislikes and your wounds and your whatever, you know what? That's bullshit. I'll just say it straight up. It's shaming and it's, I would say, a way for that others can exert control over you. And most of all, it's not helpful. The personal, your experience, your luminosity, your confusement. Again, I know that's not a word. Your brilliance, your terrible flaws and incredible genius, those are your guideposts along the way. So the personal is not an obstacle. It is the way. So please remember to respect yourself and to not diminish yourself, no matter what anyone says. And then the fourth one, which we're going to talk about today, there's six, is not the fun one. It's we are willing to taste grief and heartbreak. So you may notice from your practice, or will notice if you're a new practitioner, that as your practice evolves, after 1 week, 3 weeks, 6 months, 32 years, whatever it might be, something seems to happen for almost everyone, which is that our hearts soften. We practice on the cushion or chair, softening toward ourselves by ceasing the effort to get somewhere and just being with our experience as it is. The consequences and implications of that gesture are beyond description. I know it sounds like a small thing, you're just sitting there breathing. Kind of it is, but kind of it isn't. It opens the secret gate to wisdom, compassion, and bravery. Don't take my word for that. Please see what your experience is for yourself. So when we sit with ourselves as we are, we stop trying to work on ourselves. We soften. The wall that we've constructed for very good reason, I'm sure, around our hearts, maybe it doesn't come down, but starts to shimmer and it becomes more permeable. So you may notice that things touch you more deeply. You feel more, you notice more. One of the things that we all are going to notice at some point, if not right now, is loss is real. And the pain of what we lose as human beings, because that's how life is inexplicably painful and raw. We live in a time of great heartbreak right now, for reasons I'm sure I don't have to enumerate. And tremendous difficulties ensue when we put all of our effort into not feeling that. Now, I'm not saying we should rub our faces in difficulty and pain and grief and heartbreak. I know sometimes you got to turn away. Sometimes you got to lie down on the couch if you have the privilege of having a couch and just stare into space or watch stupid TV or something like that. I mean, not saying don't ever do that, but this is the seed syllable of bravery. And the world needs your courage right now. You need your courage. The bravery of tasting what you really feel. Hijinks ensue from the effort to distance ourselves from what we feel. I would say all or almost all of the difficulties we see in our world, the divisiveness, the anger, self-righteousness, the conspiracy theories, and so on, are created from people's efforts to not feel pain. So although feeling pain may sound like, oh, that's for wimps, it's like the bravest thing you can ever do, because it keeps you in the present, it keeps your mind clear, which enables you to be of benefit to others. Otherwise, we're just signing on for different crazy notions. So we're willing to feel prudently. And what that means is to locate the feeling of whatever you're calling heartbreak, which is, I'm sure, well named, in your body or in the environment. I know people say your feelings are in your body, and okay, but personally, I feel my feelings are in the atmosphere. When my heart is broken, the world starts to look heavy and feel like it's going to fall on my head. I could find that in my body somewhere, I guess, but it doesn't seem that specifically located. So anyway, you find where it is for you. And now here's the trick. You feel it. And you let go of the story that explains it. And you get lost in the story again. It's because this happened, that happened. I'm a loser. No, the whole world is terrible. Those things may be true. I'm sure the you're a loser part isn't. But those are for another time. Sealing is tuning in to what you are experiencing, whether in your body or in the atmosphere. We know when we're heartbroken. It's not hard to figure out. What makes it difficult to find is when we continually try to dilute it with stories and distractions and explanations. It's still there. It just seeps, it leaks into the environment. So we want to locate it prudently. I'll just say that again, because especially if you are experiencing trauma, if you have PTSD or anything like that, this may not be a good idea for you right now. So you have to be very careful with your inner state. But the more we feel, the more we heal ourselves and others. I know that's a silly poem, but it's true. It's true. When we are unwilling to feel, then we try to enlist everyone we see or everything we read, everything we watch as proof that we don't have to feel that thing. So it's hugely brave. And we try to the best of our ability. Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, a controversial and amazing Tibetan meditation master of our lifetime, he died in 1987, once said, and I'm paraphrasing, that there is a particular qualification that is essential for the spiritual warrior, which is you, by the way, because you're willing to look at your own mind, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And that is to have a broken heart. That's the sash. That's the button. You have a broken heart that enables you to be a warrior because you're willing to feel. Okay, we'll stop there. Next week, by the way, is sort of follows on to we're willing to taste grief and heartbreak, and it is we dream on behalf of others. We'll talk about that one next week. I love that one. Okay, let's sit. Begin your practice, please, by forgetting everything I just said, or whatever you thought about what I just said, and relax. Relax means be as you are. Rather than be easeful. Being as you are is called relaxing in Buddhism. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Feel heavy from the waist down, rooted and strong, and light and blossoming. From the waist up, receptive. Feel the strength of your back body by sitting up straight, but not rigid. And let your front body soften a lot, your belly, the area around your heart, your throat, soft. Let the shoulders relax. The mouth is closed. The breath is natural in and out through the nose, meaning just normal breathing. The eyes are open. And the gaze is soft and cast down to a comfortable spot in front, 4 to 6 feet or up to 2 meters or so, given the distance of your screen. And let the eyes rest. Let the brow relax. Feel your body breathing and let your attention rest on the wave of breath. Follow the in-breath. See if you can spot the moment it becomes the out-breath and flow out on the exhale. And we're not observing the breath, we're feeling the body breathe in and out. Thoughts come and go, no problem. The percentage of thoughts that come and go is 100. So you don't need to worry about having a lot of thoughts or no thoughts. Just it's like ambient noise happening right outside. You can hear it, but you're not really listening to it. However, if you notice that you become absorbed in thought, not a thought, but a line of thought, to the point that you have 100% forgotten about your breath, only 100% should you do this. Notice that. You can label that silently thinking. Let go. Like you're dropping a pebble back into a pond. Gently come back to this breath and begin again. So sit together in silence for a few minutes until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. It's very important. Thank you for practicing with me, and thank you for practicing together. I'll see you next week.